I think you only get comfortable by doing. You have to just start doing the thing that you say you can't do.
What would you do all over again and why? I'm Natalie Carpenter, women's health and fertility advocate, dot connector, and former corporate brand warrior. Each week, join me in candid conversation with an inspiring public figure who boldly shares their real life stories of adversity, impact, and what they did next. And if they would do it all over again, knowing what they know now. Welcome to the All Over Again podcast. Eliza Licht is an award-winning marketer, best-selling author, podcaster, personal branding expert, and career development coach. Eliza has authored two books, Leave Your Mark and recently On Brand. Eliza is the founder of Leave Your Mark, a multimedia brand and consultancy. Eliza has over 25 years of marketing, communications, and digital expertise from the fashion industry, all of which she leverages to advise businesses and individuals on their brand strategy. Eliza Licht spent 17 years at one iconic fashion house, a crazy concept in today's world. This paved the way for everything she has achieved to date, including most recently finding her purpose and adding her newest title, Jewish Activist. Listen in to find out what Eliza would do all over again. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the All Over Again podcast. I am so excited to introduce to you Eliza Licht. Eliza is an amazing human that I have been following even before all of these things have been transpiring, and Eliza's newfound space and title as a Jewish advocate. I have been following Eliza through her marketing journey, and I am so impressed with everything that she has done over the years. So, Eliza, hello.
Natalie, thank you so much. And I'm really honored to be on your show and welcome back to podcasting. So yay.
Thank you. It feels very good to be back and to have you as my first guest back. I feel very honored. So Eliza, I know a bit about you from what I have seen over the years following you and also online. You are such a force. Eliza, how would you describe yourself in three adjectives?
You're turning around my personal branding on me now, Natalie. Direct, decisive, authentic.
I love that. And question for you. Do you feel like the word authentic has changed slightly in the last year since it became a buzzword?
So I think that you're right, is overused for certain. I'll say it like this. Like, I was always that friend growing up that would tell you you look fat in those jeans. Like, I'm 100% real all the time. And I don't know any other way to be. So for me, I've always found success by sticking to who I am as a person and applying that in different directions. So yes, it has been buzzy, but I think I've been authentic since the beginning because I grew up in a household that was like that.
I love that. And I feel like there needs to be the authentic 1.0 and the authentic 2.0 sort of differentiation. Sure. You are so authentically seeming to me. So I love that. I wanted to get your take on that as a marketer because I think it's the word of the year, actually.
Listen, at the end of the day, we're all storytellers, right? In marketing, communications, digital. When I think back to even my days, you know, writing as DKY PR Girl on Twitter, an anonymous social media personality inspired by Gossip Girl back in the day, what was successful about that was telling people what was really happening behind the scenes, which behind the scenes wasn't something shared back in 2009. So I do think that just like telling it like it is and bringing people into a world that they don't normally have access to was an authentic way of storytelling that brands didn't do. So it's not something that's new to me, but it's something that was very gut intuitive.
Let's talk about that for a minute. So you were the person behind the DKNY social persona, then you sort of came out. I think you came out to B in the New York Times. For those of you who don't know B, B is a New York Times fashion columnist. And I met B during my brief stint in PR as well. She's amazing. I love that you too. I loved uncovering.
So I was the SVP of Global Communications for Donna Karan, which is your traditional PR, fashion shows, celebrity dressing, working with editors, 101 PR. And we were sitting around a marketing meeting one day thinking like, oh my God, there's this platform, Twitter. Maybe we should be on it. And me being a publicist, I was like, well, the handle can't be Donna Karan. People will think she's tweeting. She's a person, not just a brand. So I was like, well, why can't it just be like anonymous, like Gossip Girl? We can have it be like DKY PR Girl. And everyone was like, oh, that's a fun idea. Our general counsel was like, great idea. Aliza, you're the only person who can tweet. They just wanted really strict control over it. I was like, okay, I don't even know what this means to tweet, but sure, I'll do it on top of my day job. So I just started engaging with the community and living my life, quote, as a PR girl living in New York City, anonymously. And people didn't know it was me. Only a few people did. When I talk about authentic storytelling, it was really like being able to share what was really happening in the day job of PR and fashion without naming names, without name dropping. It was Celeb X and Stylist X and Editor X. And I was able to tell these really juicy stories, but just anonymously, of course, and also not throwing anyone under the bus. I was anonymous for almost 2 years. And then at that point, we decided as a company to pull back the veil. And I actually came out in a behind the scenes of Fashion Week YouTube video that went completely viral, got 230 million media impressions of news. And then a year later, B Shapiro reached out to do the New York Times feature. So she didn't actually, she didn't reveal me, but she was the one who documented it in the most epic full page New York Times story.
Huge.
Basically, PR girl is really PR executive because people thought I was like this 22-year-old assistant because that was my voice. But really, I was like a mom of two little kids in my 30s.
Still living the New York dream because you were in fashion in New York City and at Donna Karan.
Oh.
Fabulous.
Absolutely. In the heyday of all of that. So yes.
In the heyday. Is there any correlation between the creation of Donna Karan's social persona that you created and your next chapter in personal branding?
Oh, entirely. Because when you work for a brand that has a name like Donna Karan or DKNY, you're part of LVMH, you have your title for many, many years. I was there 17 years. You get really comfortable leaning on the credibility of where you work. And I think a lot of people very innocently do that. So essentially, being DKNY PR Girl, I was the character, and I thought of it as a character for 6 years. And when I finally decided to leave the company, that was right on the heels of my first book, Leave Your Mark, coming out, which I really describe as The Devil Wears Prada meets Career Advice. But what happens when you become a victim of what I call last name syndrome, you become Aliza from DKNY, or you become Natalie from Audi, and you lose your last name because you're like, I work for this incredible brand and everyone knows me from that brand. But what happens when you leave? So my second book on brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception, I'm the first case study because that book starts where Leave Your Mark left off, in which I am faced with this new blank canvas of, okay, well, who am I without all of that, without the title, without DKNY PR Girl, without being part of luxury fashion? And that's a scary place to start. But the inspiration for On Brand is really every single person needs to be building equity in their own name, no matter what they do or where they do it.
This is so important. And you actually recognize this from the very beginning because as a marketer and somebody who started loosely in corporate and then went full-blown corporate. And when I say loosely, like in college, I was working for Red Bull. Like I was part of the first Red Bull PR
agency,
you know, like little street team. It's funny when I think about it, but first team ever in San Diego, California. And I had this ongoing association. I would run into people years after graduating, and they'd ask me if I still worked for Red Bull. And I was sort of mortified because I was in my mid-20s at this point, working at Mercedes-Benz, had a, you know, fancy events job. I was going to Fashion Week. I was doing all these really cool things. And I had taken on that persona, and I was sort of embarrassed. You still think I am that girl that's like grabbing the cans out of the back of the truck refrigerator? And it occurred to me how funny and how true it is that you have to be so careful not becoming so deeply entrenched in the brand that you lose your identity. There's a difference between that and being an extension of a brand. And I learned that early because I didn't want to become that. And then I learned that lesson again after leaving my job at Mercedes-Benz.
Again, not to say that there's something bad for being someone who's very associated with where they work. I mean, it goes both ways. I benefited enormously from leveraging DQI PR Girl. I got my first book deal from leveraging DQI PR Girl. But I think we have to parallel path building our name at the same time. Really, when you think about it, it's very hard to do both at the same time. If you're so fixated on your job, you have to remember that the skills and experiences that we gain by having these really cool integrated jobs, they're ours no matter where we work. When we leave that company, they're still our skills and experiences, right? So this actually very connects the dots back to how I think about even a LinkedIn headline. A lot of people make the mistake of writing in their LinkedIn headline like their title and where they work. And in On Brand, I specifically talk about like, speak about yourself in the way that you identify. Like, I'm a marketer, I'm an author, I'm a podcaster. I can do marketing in a lot of different places, but you don't need to know that. You can look at my experience on LinkedIn and tell and see where I do that. So I think the headline is a great place to really own your skills and experiences yourself versus applying it to a company that you work at, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense because you still have that extension, but at the same time, you're talking about your capabilities in a broader sense and that you're marketable beyond that experience where you are now. So that's a great tip. What's another something that I should have known back then that we might be able to save someone from now that's in it?
Something that you said earlier really resonated with me when you were talking about your Natalie from Mercedes-Benz days, right? And how that person still thought you were at Red Bull. So the first subtitle of On Brand is Shape Your Narrative, because we don't take enough time to shape our narratives and communicate it out to our network. And the reason why that's a problem is in the absence of your story, people will make up their own version of it. And my mantra of what I consider to be the definition of a strong personal brand is when you've done the work to shape that narrative and communicate it out to your network so that people can speak about you and your value when you're not in the room and recommend you for opportunities that like other people haven't even heard of yet. And that doesn't happen by accident. That has to happen because you're really steering people in the direction that you want them to think about you.
That's important. And you also brought up something else that's really interesting, is that having allies at work extends beyond your experience in whatever sort of space and place you're in at that moment, doesn't it, right? There's a capability for somebody to recommend you for a promotion, for leadership, something or another, what have you, and then later on be your advocate for something else or even a collaboration and. So I think that that's an interesting point that you just made that has so many legs.
Yeah, I mean, I spend some time in On Brand talking about how important it is to earn that social capital, right? Not just to be able for someone to say, oh yeah, Natalie, she's so good at what she does. Like she's great to work with, but also you can call Natalie in a pinch and she's going to deliver. Or even raising your hand to support a colleague or someone in your industry for nothing in return and building that rapport. And that's, to me, the earning of that social capital comes back in spades. And, you know, you always hear about, especially in corporate, you're like, oh, you hear about an amazing project and you hear about like the team of that project. And you're like, well, how did those people get put on that team? It's like, because people are talking about their abilities when they're not there. And they're like, you know what, let's pluck this person for that opportunity. So it is really important. And I think what I say in On Brand is waiting around for people to notice you're good at what you do is not a strategy. You have to learn, especially as women, how to talk about that. And that is uncomfortable and it's cringy. And that's why people hate personal branding, but it is essential to success.
And I learned that very important piece of information when I worked for a PR guru, Elizabeth Harrison, who you probably know.
I know her extremely well. I love her.
I love Elizabeth too. And I learned that then because you're right. I had always felt like I was just supposed to work so hard and someone was going to notice and I'd get the promotion in this environment that was predominantly male. And so I felt like I kind of had to suppress myself a little bit to be a part of whatever the boys' club had created. And it wasn't until I worked at Harrison and Schiffman for Elizabeth, and Elizabeth's like, I'm not asking you to brag, but I'm asking you to start talking up the things that you're doing because you're doing great things. So I thought, okay, so I started practicing that. And that served me so well there. But then also later when I went to Audi and then I started doing my own thing, right? Like I learned how to sort of publicize myself. So that's a really interesting and important piece of advice. And I love that you know Elizabeth.
Yes. And now I'm going to reach out to her after this because I haven't spoken to her in a little bit.
Please do.
But throughout On Brand, give the reader these mental gymnastics exercises. There's an actual workbook in the book. There's quizzes throughout. And one of the quizzes is 15 ways to know that you're bragging. Or how do you talk about yourself without bragging? Nobody, I hate the word brag. I don't want anyone to sit there and just talk about themselves all day. But how do you make sure people know your value without just sounding gross? And that's a skill. So that's one of the mental gymnastics exercises in the book. Because if we don't learn how to do that, I mean, this conversation wouldn't even occur if we were in a room full of men. They would just tell you how good they are at whatever it is they're doing. And maybe they are, maybe they're not.
Yes. And something else I learned, which I think correlates well, is lifting up other people along the way. So if you had a great event or you had a great media moment, socialize it and talk about it to your team and also share about everybody that helped you win to get to that point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I have a rule in On Brand, which is 1 to 5, which is for every one time that you're talking about a win, proactively amplify 5 other people.
I like that. That's amazing.
It's a good way to feel okay about talking about yourself because you're also going to, at the same time, lift 5 other people up.
The saying is rising tides lift all boats, right? So there we have it. What was the defining moment in your professional career that made you pivot to becoming an entrepreneur?
Well, when Leave Your Mark came out in 2015, I decided to leave Donna Karan after 17 years. And I was like, I am going to be a consultant. I'm going to have my own company. I'm very visual. So I went on Canva and I made myself a little Leave Your Mark LLC logo. This is the beginning of On Brand. And I posted it on Instagram and I'm like, there it is. There's my consulting business. I posted it. So therefore I have a business. Not true. I spent 10 months kind of floundering around this idea of consulting, and my husband, we have a very funny relationship. And he's like, you know, being successful at consulting means that you have to have like clients. I'm like, oh, it does? I had no idea. And I would joke and I'd be like, but I don't like those clients. Like, I don't want to work with those brands. He's like, right, but you can't have a business with no clients. And I was like, he's right. So I wrote this article, which you can still find on Forbes. It's called How You Know You're Not Meant to Be an Entrepreneur. And I think why I wrote that piece was to give myself permission to fail at consulting publicly. Just like, hey, everybody. Yeah, no, I suck at this. This is not what I do. And I was like, you know what? It's totally cool to work at a company. I love being part of a team. I'm going to go back in-house. So I ended up going back in-house and ended up getting a job as Executive Vice President of Marketing Communications at Allison Olivia. And I did that for 2.5 years. And then I was like feeling that creative bug. And I'm like, I think I want to do a podcast. So I decide I'm going to do the Leave Your Mark podcast, which I did do. But then I realized, oh shit, I need to start consulting again. And this is now 2.5 years after I already like failed at consulting one time. But I decided to like really do a deep dive into like why I failed and pull out like what I would do differently this time. And one of the things that I realized I hated about it was being by myself and working on a strategy and then handing it off or like pitching clients. So I much prefer the fractional CMO type of work where you integrate into a team. So I sort of relaunched it. And now that's what I've been doing since then.
And that is actually a perfect segue. And I probably should have prompted this answer with this question. What would you do all over again and why?
Well, what would I do all over again? I mean, I feel grateful about every aspect of my experience. The one thing I would do over and not repeat is when I was building DQI PR Girl and it was becoming really, really big, because it was anonymous, I was very scared to have my own personal social media channels. Because I was myself as DQI PR Girl, it was my personality. I was basically just living my life anonymously. So I didn't build a social presence until 3 years after I started DQI PR Girl, which is so incredibly stupid because I don't own DQI PR Girl. And even worse than being 3 years late to your own social media presence, Mashable reached out one day and they were like, hey, Lisa, we're doing an article on people who have really big social media presence for brands, but don't actually do social media personally. Do you want to comment? And I was like, yeah. And I think, that's actually a mistake that I made. So I think going back, I would definitely have created it at the same time and figure out a way to just not out myself as the person behind the Twitter handle.
That is really fascinating because it was the before. It's like the Roman Empire, right? There you built it and then...
Then you have to build it again for yourself.
That's so hard.
It is hard also because, you know, every day in social media land is like a year. So can you imagine 3 years later, it's like so much has changed.
Let's talk about that for a second, because there's something to be said about being anonymous behind a handle. And to your point too, right, about being authentic, these days you have to be yourself for many reasons. One is that we're going to think you're a bot or, you know, somebody with some alternative or nefarious agenda. But there was a point where you could hide behind these brands. And for me, I did that through this brand handle called Fertilust because I was going through fertility challenges and I wanted to build a community and find people. But I was also at Audi and I didn't want to be outed personally for being a failure personally because I felt like I was kick-ass at work, but yet I couldn't get it together personally and have a baby. Like it all felt like this will out me. So it took me about 2 years before I was like, okay, no, here I am, because I was so exhausted. I just like had nothing left to lose at that point. And I realized there were so many other people that were just like me that were out there. And that was the way to connect. And I think that that's the key, right? Is that connection point. But I mean, for you, what was it? What was that moment that made you feel like, well, I have to do this. I have to build my personal brand all over again, but as me, not as Donna Karen PR Girl.
That was really the publication of Leave Your Mark and leaving the company at the same time. It's like, I had no choice. It was like, okay, you're getting thrown out of the nest. Like you have to build it. I had built it a little before, but now it was crucial. With DKMY PR Girl, even though I was anonymous, it was authentic because I was telling the real behind the scenes stories. It didn't matter who was telling the stories, right? It was very much real life Gossip Girl. Like you loved the stories and you hung on every single detail, but you didn't really care I mean, you kind of wondered who Gossip Girl was, but like you still love the stories. It was kind of like that. But then when you're your real self and you're, you know, you're publishing a book and you're starting a totally different career on your own, it's important to know your brand guardrails, which is a really big part of the exercises in On Brand, because while we want to be authentic, you also cannot hang everything out on the internet, right? You have to know where your brand guardrails start and where they end, where you have permission to play, and thinking in terms of what do you want to be known for? What's the end goal? And is your social media presence actually serving you or actually hurting your goal?
So what's an example of a help and a hindrance that you've seen?
I think people forget themselves a lot on social media. So I have a couple of rules. The first rule is that if you wouldn't feel comfortable seeing your post as a full page ad in the New York Times, don't post it, because the screenshot is way more powerful than the delete button. The next thing is really this just quick mental filter of why am I sharing this? I think if you stop yourself before you post anything online and you ask yourself, why am I sharing this? In conjunction with, are my stakeholders watching? Like, is my boss watching? Are my clients watching? Is my investor going to see this? Like, when you really check yourself and then you check in on your brand guardrails in your mental filter, you will find that you get in way less trouble. And a lot of people don't do that. When I wrote On Brand, I wanted to pay equal time to the people who were like, I'm all about building a social presence, and the people that are like, I'm not doing social media to build my brand. I'm going to build my brand in real life, because you can have a very strong personal brand and not be on social media. But the question then becomes like, how do you make sure that the way that you're showing up is how you intend? And is that helping your goal? And I think there's a lot of thought process to this, which is why I made On Brand have workbook pages, because you have to think about it as you learn about it in the book.
It sounds so personal. And what are your thoughts about, for example, you know, the advent of the mom social channels where they're talking about their families and their kids, and again, it's there forever. I wonder what your thoughts are as an expert in this. What's it going to be like when their kids are a little bit older and have their own social platforms and their peers are aware of their parents' platforms? I don't know why I think about these things. I think about things when I post them, and should my daughter see them in hopefully a long time from now? How is that going to affect her? I hope not, because I go pretty deep. And I want to know like what your thoughts are, because you don't want your child to be inadvertently subjected to something as a result of your footprint.
It's a great question. I think, first of all, I really believe that you don't have to get super personal on social media to be successful. And I think that's the exciting part of creating brand guardrails, right? Every single person is unique. Every single person's personal brand is unique. That's the recipe for success, because nobody is you. And it's a choice. It's a choice with how personal you get and how much you disclose. And of course, people build enormous audiences sharing every little detail, but that's not for everyone. That's not for me, for example. I have teenage kids. I have a 16-year-old daughter and a 19-year-old son. I can tell you very clearly that like 2 years ago, I learned that my daughter unfollowed me on Instagram.
How did that feel?
I was like, oh my God, like what? She's like, I can't look at it. Because when they get to that age, it's a little bit like they think that you're in their space. Meanwhile, I've been in this space since 2009, you know? So it's like, no, honey, you joined my space. I've been here first. But then last year, I saw the notification like, Sabrina Licht is now following you. And I'm like, I have arrived. My daughter is now following me again. But you do have to think about how your brand is perceived, not just by your kids, but your kids' friends. I mean, it does, you know, it is something that I don't actively think about, because I'm so clear on my own brand guardrails that I feel very comfortable with like where I play. And if I decide to go deep into a certain content bucket, I'm going to always come from a place of knowledge and research and feel really confident in what I'm saying, or I'm not going to post it. So I think for the most part, kids that become part of the content strategy, they either hate that or they love it and they become just like their parents. So I think it just depends on the type of kids that you have. Like, I have friends who are influencers who have their kids are part of the strategy, and they obviously love doing it. They're little stars. It's like you're like an actress, and then you're the stage mom of your kids, and then your kids start acting. Like, it's similar. It's not for everyone, but for certain people it works really well. And for other people, the kids just revolt and they're like, I want nothing to do with that.
It's curious. There's probably going to be some sort of documentary on this in like 10 years, maybe 5. Oh, I can't wait to watch
totally.
It.
Totally. Totally. It's actually would be a great
documentary. Don't you think? So why is personal branding important for everyone?
Because everyone has some version of a personal brand. It starts with what makes you you. It's what you say. It's what you don't say. It's what you do. It's what you choose to align with. It's your mannerisms, your energy, your attitude. You're making an impression within 7 seconds of meeting someone. So I also think that, like, if you know that people are consuming you, don't you want to know the message that you're sending? Like, don't you want to be intentional about it? It's like when I first was meeting with the sales team at my publisher, Union Square, they were like, well, who's the demographic? I'm like, everybody. They're like, well, that's not a demographic. I'm like, no, everybody. Everybody is the demographic. Because you can't escape personal branding. Especially right now, I will add, and I wrote a piece for Harvard Business Review on this, the importance of your personal brand and earning social capital, especially as a hybrid or remote worker. Like, there is a very strong chance of becoming invisible in an organization because you are physically not there and you're not doing the work to shape the narrative.
Fascinating, but also not obvious because the world has been so shifted on how this all plays out. So that's an interesting. So what would you recommend to someone who is working at home on how to shape their personal brand so that they get more exposure in their professional environment?
So a couple of things, and this really is part of the book where we get into brand voice, visual identity. So let's start with simple things like camera on. Camera on is many times a choice in a company. And it's super easy to just be like, oh, I'm just gonna keep my camera off today. But when you show up camera on and you show up looking put together, polished, ready for that meeting, you're telling the other person that you value their time and you value what you're about to do. And I think that we've lost a lot of that after the pandemic. I think things have gotten way more casual. So camera on and showing up in a way that shows that you care about the meeting. I also think that, you know, proactive communication is essential for people that are working remote. Some of the teams are in the office. You might be remote. Maybe there's a meeting that I'm sure we've all been here where you're the remote person and there's a whole bunch of people in a room and you can't really hear the side conversations. You only really hear where they're talking to you and then something's decided, but you don't know. It's like making sure that you're aware of like the agenda for the meeting. You're showing up prepared. You're ending the meeting knowing what are the next steps, like being an active participant. Maybe, you know, outreaching to people when you have some downtime and saying like, hey, I'm slow right now. Do you need support? Like, that's how you get mobility within a company when you're able to help people that maybe aren't directly on your team, but you're helping them anyway. I think just remembering that you have to work a little harder to make an impression, especially on management, if you're not in front of them. And that means that you're going to have to make sure that when you are accomplishing things, you're vocal about it and you're shaping that narrative and you're communicating out to your manager and you're not just assuming that people know what you're doing.
Communication is so key.
Yeah, it is key. And, you know, in On Brand, I have a lot of expert contributors in all different facets. And Dori Clark, who's, I think, the number one communications coach out there, I always quote her when I'm doing these podcasts because it's such a simple comment that she makes, but it's so true. No one is thinking about you. Full stop. No one is thinking about you. So if you're not going to make the effort to make sure that you're shaping your own story, people will either not think about you or make up their own version.
This is brilliant.
She's brilliant.
Yeah, that's she's brilliant. The other thing that came up in my mind as you said that is, you know, when you're in a group workout class, I don't know about you. I am not so coordinated with the dance moves. So when I go to a dance situation, I'm always like, oh, you know, a little bit cringy, like, oh gosh, I hope no one noticed. And then, you know, you realize after a while that nobody cares, right? I mean, this is a personal, not a professional, but I think the same thing, right? Nobody cares unless you actually like, if you were to get in the middle of the floor and start breakdancing or try to, okay, yeah, maybe they would notice, right? But to your point, you really have to show up and make sure that people notice that you're there because they're so focused on themselves.
Exactly. And, you know, I was on a call with somebody the other week and she was like, I really want to start working, expanding my client base and including, you know, travel. And I'm like, that sounds great. Did you tell anyone? She's like, well, no, not yet. And I'm like, post it on LinkedIn. Say that you're now going to be taking on travel clients. She's like, really? That's so weird. I'm like, why is that? How would anybody know? She's a photographer. How would anybody know that you're now going to do travel unless you tell them? She's like, okay. But it was like, I was telling her to like jump off a cliff.
Is it an imposter syndrome thing?
I don't know if it's imposter syndrome as much as it is people are so uncomfortable talking about themselves. And that is one of the challenges that I try to help people work through in this book. Because we need to be able to be our own publicists.
It sounds intimidating when you say it like that, though, right? Like, I think the average person will hear that and say, wow, how do I show up to be my own spokesperson? So what would your number one piece of advice be?
I give a couple different tactics in the book, but there's one in particular that I think is a very low lift. Your email signature. If you're promoting something new, you want people to read your blog, you want people to know about your new podcast, put it in your email signature.
So simple and brilliant.
So simple. Every few months, look at your email signature. Is that still what you want to be promoting? So that's one thing. The next thing that a lot of people I know do is this like State of the Union email. It is blind CC, so it's not intimidating because you're not expecting a response necessarily. So you don't have to have that pressure of like, I'm emailing Natalie. Is she going to respond to me? Basically like, hey, everyone, I just want to give you a quick update. It's been a few months. I'm really proud of this work that I did. Right now, I'm focusing on X, Y, and Z. I'm looking for X, Y, and Z. Please reach out to me. Let me know what you're up to and how I can help you. And people do that to me all the time. I get these emails. And actually, a couple of weeks ago, I got one from Melissa DeRosa, who was Governor Cuomo's secretary. She has a new book that came out in October, and she was giving an update to whoever's on this list, what she's up to with her new book. And I wrote her back, and I'm like, I am so glad I'm on this distribution because you need to come on my show. We just recorded today, but I would never have thought of her, like if she didn't put that in my inbox. So it's a really, like, it's just a risk-free way to just communicate. And I think as long as you are asking and giving at the same time, people want to share what they're working on. The minute you ask someone, like, how can I help you? Susan McPherson is an expert in my book. She's wrote The Lost Art of Connecting. The minute you ask someone, how can I help you? It's like the entire world opens up.
I agree. I think that it has to come from a place, again, of authenticity. And secondly, I think it has to come from a place of having the bandwidth to do that.
And also being, when you say authenticity, yes, very important. Not just, you know how many people are like, oh, I'll totally make that intro for you. And then they completely ghost. Or they say they'll totally do that thing and then it never happens. So say it and do it is really important. Like the follow through really matters.
Follow through really matters. That is a quotable for sure. This is a professional question about newsletters. Does it matter whether it's just a newsletter that's like, oh, like it looks like it was just written with a BCC, or does it have to be like a beautiful templated Flowdesk newsletter?
I'm talking about a blind CC email. There's nothing designed here. It's literally like an email.
Okay, easy. I think it's important that we all remember that no one is a success overnight. And we look at you and you are an absolute success and you've done so many things. You're a podcast host.
Not overnight.
You're an author. You are a social media guru, but it didn't happen overnight. But people only see what they see today, right? So what would you share with this group about yourself that no one would know about who you were before you became Eliza Licht, this amazing, powerful superstar?
Well, I don't know about amazing, powerful superstar, but thank you. One of the things that I love doing is doing podcasts, doing TV, speaking on stages. Like, I love talking publicly, but I grew up absolutely horrified by the idea of public speaking because I had a stutter, and I stuttered my entire childhood, college, ongoing speech therapy for years and years and years. If you told me when I was in seventh grade crying, begging my mom to write a note as to why I could not give a book report in front of the class, that I would go on Good Morning America and be like excited and happy about it, I would say that you're crazy. But I think the point is you can train yourself to do anything if you just give yourself permission to get comfortable doing it. It, like they say, it always seems impossible till it's done, right? I tell myself that all the time, all the time.
So it took a lot of time and hard work and truly willpower, right, to keep on going with speech therapy to get you where you are today. So what would your message be to everybody to keep on going? Willpower? Like, if you had to stand up in front of a room right now and say, this is my takeaway for you as to why you should get started today and not be afraid by everybody who you see today that has made it, what would it be?
I think you only get comfortable by doing. You have to just start doing the thing that you say you can't do. When I was going to speech therapy, I had the most ridiculous phobias. So for example, I'd be like, oh, I can't say anything with a vowel that begins with a vowel. Okay, so my name begins with a vowel. So any situation that that people would be like, oh, what's your name? I would be like, just like a deer in headlights. And they'd be like, oh, you don't know your name? So I would have to compensate and say, my name is Eliza, because obviously a consonant in front made me comfortable. But I would go with my speech pathologist to like the bagel store, and he would put me on the spot and say, okay, Lizzie, you order. And the minute someone prompts you and they're like, oh, okay, what would you like? And you're like, oh my God, I have to like speak on demand now. Those situations made me panic stricken. But the more that I put myself in those situations, the more comfortable I would be. So it always seems like this like elusive like thing in the air that you're like, one day I can do that thing. Or today you can do that thing and not care if it doesn't go perfectly. And then you can do it again and maybe it gets a little better. So it's not even willpower as much as it is not being afraid that the thing that you're doing isn't perfect yet.
Words spoken from a true marketing expert that has lived the life. No, truly. I mean, it's simple, but profound and important. So thank you for sharing that. And so I want to pivot now, because we've been talking about what you've been training yourself to be for, okay, I know you were at Donna Karan for, you said 17 years.
I started at Donna Karan in 1998.
So you've been building this. You have your personal brand image nailed. You know how to guide other people in doing that. And then all of a sudden, October 7th happens. So you shared that being a Jewish activist was not on brand for you. So please share a little bit about that experience and how you got comfortable with becoming that persona as part of your personal brand.
So I'll say that in On Brand, one of the early exercises is the Venn diagram. And I do the exercises for the reader. So I use myself as the case study. So I'm showing you, here's my Venn diagram. My Venn diagram's like fashion, social media, mentorship, career advice. The word Jewish is not on there. The word activist is not on there. That is not who I am. I am first and foremost not a religious person. I'm a traditional person. And I grew up in a very conservative Jewish household. My kids have gone to Jewish day school, but we're not Orthodox in any way, shape, or form. That's just to say, I also grew up with four grandparents who survived the Holocaust. And that is something that, of course, I knew growing up, and my grandmother lived with us, and she had the tattoo on her arm and all the things. But that was such ancient history that you're just like, it's something you know, but it's something you're not thinking like that could ever in a million years happen again. So I think it started really with Kanye. When Kanye had his first just outburst of anti-Semitism, I posted on social media about Kanye. And this account, NGU Hatred, had reached out maybe a month later, and they were like, hey, you know, we really appreciated your post about Kanye and fighting anti-Semitism. Would you be willing to create a video talking about why it's important to stand up against anti-Semitism? And I see this DM and I'm like, oh yeah, totally. But in my heart, I'm thinking, well, this feels really random. Like, no, not right now. Nothing, no outbursts have happened from celebrities that I need to talk about this. Like in my mind, I'm like, it's quiet. Like, why are we going to bring this up? Like, let's just leave it under the radar. And I said, yeah, I said, I'm really busy right now, but you know, when I have time, or I'm thinking when it makes sense and it's part of more a relevant conversation. My sister and I took my mom for her birthday to Vegas, October 6th. And we were in the casino, October 7th. And I get a DM from NGU Hatred, the Instagram account. And they say, Aliza, I'm not sure if you're aware of what has happened, but would you be willing to make a video? Now you can picture like Vegas, casino, music, slot machines, like in the most happy, carefree environment. And I'm
just
like,
the chills.
I said to my mom and my sister, I'm like, I need to take 5 minutes. I need to go to the room. I don't know what's happening. Let me, like, just got this really weird message. So of course I figure out very quickly what has happened and say to myself, like, you know what? I need to say something right now. And of course you have that moment where you're like, oh my God, this is like so not what I post about. This is like nothing. Like it was so random for me to have a video, to make a video like this. But in my head, I said to myself, your grandparents did not survive the Holocaust for you to be scared about losing Instagram followers. That's really what it comes down to. Because what was the risk? I know what I'm talking about. I'm very, very well educated on history. So the question becomes, are you scared because you think you're going to alienate friends? Well, then they're not your friends. So I recorded this video and it went viral, like immediately. And I think it went viral because this kind of content didn't exist yet. Now we see it every day, but it was minute one of this tragedy. And then it became so clear just from the reaction of people that people needed it. And they needed someone who had the stomach, quite frankly, to get the hate back, to be able to stand up and give them content. I really saw myself as giving people content that they can't produce themselves, but that they would feel comfortable sharing. So then it became like really feeling like a mission for me to continue. So I did that. And then, you know, you realize that like you still have a book to promote and you still have business and you still have other things. So I told people like in the new year, like I'm still who I am. This is still very important to me and I'm still going to talk about it, but it's going to be integrated into my personal brand, which is a lot more things. And the reaction really was, we love that side too. Like there were so many new people who were following, but they only knew that one side of me. So one of the things that I say in On Brand is, per Dori, like no one's thinking about you. But the other thing is you have to reintroduce yourself to your network over and over again in new and interesting ways. So because there were so many new followers, 2 weeks ago, I was like, it's been brought to my attention that a lot of you don't actually know what I do. You think that this is just my job of Jewish activism. This is not my job. So I reintroduced myself to my network, which is a really great tactic to do. You can do it on LinkedIn. You can do it on whatever platform you're on, is just to say, hey, there's a lot of new people here. I just want to say hello and give you like a little brief background. It's a great way to signal that new people are following you. It's a great way to re-message what you're working on or what you're looking to do. And yeah, so now I've become like a news source / analyst, correspondent. I don't know. It's been crazy, but it feels like that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Does it feel like it's part of your purpose?
Very much so. Very much so. And also, quite frankly, like what has happened has made other things that used to seem so important, like book promotion, seem really insignificant, you know? So it's like we've been living with it for a couple of months. So it's like now trying to find that balance. And I just have to say thank you to you, Natalie, because you reached out so early as an ally. And I greatly, greatly appreciate it because, you know, so many people didn't.
And that hurts my heart. As you've been talking, I've just been getting the chills over and over again. I think that I know what it feels like to have a purpose that burns so strong that if you don't say something, you think you're literally going to crumble and die. So I think that it's so powerful that you took that moment, that experience, and shed light on it with facts and with truth to so many who truly needed to hear that they had support. And the reason I reached out, because I didn't know how to do that on the social platforms, and I was re-socializing things that you were saying and Sam was saying, and even Claudia was saying. Those moments, your voices allowed me to be able to express my solidarity with breaking the hate, because no one should be where we are. It's still confounding that we live in a time. Because I'd heard stories from my mother, my father, like I'd heard the stories, but we'd read them in textbooks, but I didn't think that that was our reality. And I didn't realize that the world became so woke, so to speak, that we fell asleep, that there was this brewing hatred. I thought we were, you know, this sort of enlightened bunch that were creating these beautiful children who were promoting kindness. And because I feel like that's what I was trying to do. You know, I was trying to go through all of my stuff, which again, like so insignificant in the scheme of everything, so that I could show up and be a better parent and teach my daughter kindness and not to be a bully or be bullied and know the difference and all the things. I just didn't realize that there was this much hate. I didn't realize that the indoctrination of hate is a real thing, even though it's been told to me, I didn't understand it. And by that, I mean, I've been to Israel. My father had Israeli friends that he met on a plane. My dad was that person. He would meet people on the plane and they would become his forever friends. It was amazing. He was born during World War II in Poland. And it doesn't matter that he was raised Catholic. There's a lot we'll never know about his family because most of them died during World War II because of being caught in the middle of the war. My mom was born in Paris and spent a lot of her young years in Algeria and happened to be in Algeria as the Franco-Algerian War broke out. So she has her own experiences, you know, and saw some crazy things happen too, right? And the stories that they shared, and even when I went to Israel with my dad and my sister and met up with these beautiful, by the way, very diverse, that Israel is so diverse. It's so confusing to me why people think that it's so whitewashed in a certain way. It is one of the most diverse and truly inclusive places I have ever been in my entire life. In fact, I've never been a place that is so accepting. You can be you in Israel, whatever you want to do, you could be. And it was so eye-opening going to Jerusalem, having there be streets. There are, you've got your Jewish section, you've got your Muslim section, you have your Greek Orthodox section, and everybody is amicable and gets on. And I was like, well, where is all of this struggle and strife that everybody talks about in the media. And I didn't see it there. Like I never, granted, I was there for 2.5 weeks of my life. So it wasn't like so long, but
it
was beautiful. I felt it.
You saw a very accurate representation. That's why anyone who actually goes realizes how much the media twists what actually happens there. I had the honor and privilege of listening to Yosef Haddad speak the other day. He's a very famous Arab-Israeli influencer slash journalist. And he was born in Israel. He's Muslim. He was not required to serve in the IDF. And he volunteered to serve in the IDF because he loves his country. And he was the commander over Jewish soldiers. And like, they're brothers. Like, it's crazy, the misinformation and the propaganda. And I guess that's also why I feel so compelled to speak up and try. I mean, I know that I'm not solving it, but to try to, you know, if I can educate at least people in my own network, because there are people who just, I don't expect people to know all this history. It's not like they studied it growing up. I did, because I went to a Jewish day school. But it's crazy. It's just crazy.
And how do you recommend that non-Jews can be allies? What are ways in which people can show up for the Jewish community and their friends?
Thank you for asking that question. I really think it's like reach out to your Jewish friends and just say, it's never too late. Like, how are you doing? How are you doing? I worked on, you know, the Break the Hate campaign, which the Instagram account is breakthehate.world. That really is an Instagram account dedicated to inviting people into a social movement of inclusivity and saying we denounce anti-Semitism and all forms of hate. We made really fun sparkly stickers. Sticker Beans made them, and buying a Break the Hate sticker from Sticker Beans benefits the Mark Schoenwetter Holocaust Education Foundation, where they provide grants for educators to teach about the Holocaust or take your class to the Holocaust Museum in DC or whatever type of programming. But so Break the Hate is really just like a passion project to get people to stand up against hate, which you would think wouldn't be such a hard thing to get people to do, but it is. It is. So anyone who's willing to break the hate with us is a great thing, or just check in on your friends or invite them on your podcast like you did, Natalie. So thank you.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for being here. That has been my honor. So what inspired you to create the Break the Hate initiative?
One of the positives, if you can name a positive, is that the Jewish community came together in a very, very strong way. So we're all in these WhatsApp groups, and there's so many text threads, and there's so many groups, and everyone is sharing the same news back and forth, discussing the news and sharing social posts, and did you see this, or did you know about this? And I felt like, so great that we're all so well-informed and we're all reading and talking about what's happening. Great. But is there a way to do something? I just felt like I needed to do something, not just participate in this back and forth ping pong of news. And obviously I'm a consultant in brand marketing and social media. So I, in conversations with Claudia and Sam and other people, I was like, can we put an initiative together to break the hate? And, you know, we all tossed it around and tried to like think about like the best way to do it and what was the path of least resistance and what would people be comfortable doing, and people who haven't spoken out, are they going to really do a video? So I'm like, I'll just make a logo, and if people just share the logo, that'll be great too. And, you know, the hashtag really caught on, and it has become like, I'm very proud of it, like a staple in so many people's posts. So even just posting the hashtag Break the Hate, that's a great thing to do. You know, you don't have to do that much. So yeah, it was really just wanting to do something and to have, and now of course in that channel we share news and other things like that, but that was the inspiration for it. But Samantha actually at us did, you know, her new 2024 New Voices campaign, where she's gotten a ton of celebrities to speak out for the first time against anti-Semitism, which is fantastic. And you can see that on the Instagram handle 2024 New Voices.
I've been watching the great work that both of you are doing, and it's so inspiring. And something I want to have you elaborate a little bit on is this misnomer that if you are against anti-Semitism, that you are for some reason Islamophobic. I don't understand why people feel like you have to be one polar opposite of the other. How would you address that? Because I feel like the world is suffering at the hands of terrorists, and I don't understand why that's not so clear.
I would say that people should stand up against all forms of hate. There is no place for hate in our world. The world is way too complicated as it is. So, by the way, you can be against anti-Semitism, pro-Israel, and pro-Palestinian. Like, I would love nothing more than Palestinians to live in a place in Gaza, if Gaza could become this amazing vacation spot. But it seems like there's just this indoctrination. And now we see the education starts when they're like little kids. And it's going to take a few generations to undo that, unfortunately. But you can be against all forms of hate. It's not, by the way, I don't think this is just about Jews in Israel. I think this is about Western ideology. And I think that affects way more people than just Jewish people.
This is seemingly the first layer of something of which I don't think we will completely be able to wrap our heads around unless there's another 9/11 in the US.
Yes, I have said the same comment, and it's a horrible thing to say and think, but it is true.
I'm sorry I said it, but I
No. I said it too. I've said it to other people, and you said it very normally just now, and I was like, yeah, I've said that. And by the way, Natalie, it's like they're literally saying that. They're literally telling us the plan. So is everyone just like, believe people when they show you who they are the first time? That's really the lesson here. They're literally saying the plan. And if you choose to ignore it, well, we'll see how that goes.
Right. I'm in firm agreement. I think extreme anything is dangerous. Extreme anything, any platform, any religion, any political structure is scary. And we're seeing that here in the US, we're seeing that abroad. It's crazy. But when you get to the level of terrorism, you know, and Hamas and these ideological, sort of psychological oriented, this sounds crazy, but they're very seemingly not sophisticated, but they're so sophisticated to be operating the way that they are.
There's a lot of money behind.
It's scary.
Somebody made the joke the other day. I mean, it was funny, but it's not funny. Someone was like, the next time someone asks me like what agencies I think are doing a great job in marketing and PR, I'm just going to say hire Hamas because they're literally killing it.
The first few times that I posted about things and I got, you know, my ass handed to me on social media, I was sort of offended. I was like, wow. I didn't even say anything about this. Why are they coming after me for, you know, of course it's awful, these poor Palestinian children that are like, but I didn't say that. I just said I'm against anti-Semitism. It's a non sequitur. Like, why does it have to be grouped together? Why is this person gaslighting me? And then I realized over time, pretty quickly, that there are these bots, right? And then people started outing the bots and that it's not just coming from Hamas PR, it's China and Russia, right? And it, listen, if you follow the money trail, think about it. All of these groups have a stake in the game. No eyes are on the Ukraine, right? No, I shouldn't say no, but less eyes are on Ukraine. Less eyes are on, you know, China, Taiwan. This is not brain surgery. You know a lot about history. I am learning as much as I can about things, but I would not consider myself to be an expert, so I'm not going to weigh in on that. But in all forms of our lives, if you follow the money trail, it will always give you the answer, even personally.
Yes, so true.
Right?
So true.
If you could share one thing with the world right now about anything, what would it be?
Parting words. So I'll share two things because I think they're both really important. Two post-it notes that every single person should have on their computer. And just permanently, you could choose whatever color post-it note you want. The first post-it note should say, why not me? Because you will never find an answer to that question. And I have consistently, whenever I have felt that something's not working or someone said no or whatever. Like my podcasts, people said no to working with me. I did it anyway. It's like, why not me? Why not me? And the second post-it note, which I also really love, is if you're in the room, you belong there. And a lot of people, when they get in the room or they get a seat at the table or they get an opportunity, they waste time thinking like, are they smart enough? Are they good enough? Do they deserve it? Can they handle it? But really what they should be doing is, what kind of impression do you want to make now that you're in the room?
That is brilliant.
If you have that on your computer and you see that, it's just like a really helpful reminder, because every single person is going to have moments of self-doubt. But like, when you tell yourself like, okay, but like everyone has self-doubt, then like, stop doubting yourself. You got the opportunity, now crush it. Or they said no, but like, doesn't mean it's forever no. Why go to somebody else? Like, why not?
And maybe it's just,
I mean, when I got turned down for my podcast from like every production company, I was like, why can't I do this? And I just Googled how to do a podcast and then did a podcast. So we get in our own ways, but if you have those post-its, they're really helpful.
I love the post-its, and I especially love the why not me. And also, I think we shouldn't be afraid, right? To, if somebody says no, maybe it's just not right now.
Or maybe that's not the right person to ask.
Or maybe it's not the right person to ask. I love this. Words to live by. I'm posting these as soon as we end this podcast. Aliza, I just want to thank you so very much for joining me here today. You are a wealth of knowledge, and I am super grateful that you have been here today.
Thank you, Natalie, for inviting me on, for reaching out, for being so kind in your emails. I really, you have no idea how much I appreciated them. And you were very early on in reaching out too.
Thank you.
I'm really grateful. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the All Over Again podcast. I hope that you learned something from today's episode. If you enjoyed this, please leave a 5-star review about All Over Again on Apple Podcasts. Please also let me know what spoke to you about the episode on our social media channels @AllOverAgainPodcast. I can't wait to hear from you.